get you through the night. It's all right. It's all right. Bet your money all your life. It's all right. It's all right. Don't need a salt to drop your flowers. Oh, no. Oh, no. Whatever gets you through your life.
Hello again and welcome to I've Got a Beatles podcast. You were just listening to John Lennon's 1974 number one hit, Whatever Gets You Through the Night, which is probably most famous for its collaborating partner on that one, which you might have heard a certain Reginald Dwight on the piano and the vocals there, a.k.a. Elton John. And if you remember, if you're a diehard listener to this podcast, you remember we talked about Paul McCartney's collaborations, of which there were many, and we just scratched the surface.
Yeah, we'd probably do a part two, part three.
Keep going, I know.
Yeah.
And so we covered a lot of interesting collaborations there, and today's episode is going to be a John Lennon collaboration episode, which there's definitely not as many for a lot of reasons. I mean, one, obviously, is that he was killed in 1980, so that's taken a lot of years away. But what are some other reasons?
Two, he sat out a few years to raise Sean in his formative years, and so it's about a three-year gap with not very much of anything. Then also, you know, he was in the Beatles, and they were pretty busy all the time. They didn't really collaborate a lot of, like, outside stuff until kind of later in the Beatles. We'll talk about a couple of those things. They as a group collaborated, if you remember, with Tony Sheridan, which we talked about in our fifth Beatle episode, where it was determined that Tony Sheridan is not the fifth Beatle. So
no, not at all. Not so even close. To,
but that was definitely a collaboration. But other than that, it was pretty much like maybe an occasional guest person coming in. Your Eric Clapton or you know, whoever coming in to play on the Beatles records, but not very much after that. No. But they did have one collaboration with a different group early on.
Yeah, we're going to keep coming back to this group and its members throughout this episode because there's other collaborations with them, and I'm talking about the Rolling Stones. And everybody knows that the story of the Beatles and Rolling Stones were supposedly these really feared rivals of one another, but it turns out really they were pretty good friends. And in fact, as you were telling me earlier about a new documentary about the Stones where they talk about how the Beatles really spurred them to, like, actually write their own songs.
Yeah, this there's a documentary, Crossfire Hurricane, which if you haven't seen it, definitely go get it and check it out. It's on DVD now, and it's a really, really good Stones documentary, mostly about their earlier years to mid-70s kind of era, not so much after, say, Miss You.
Mm-hmm. Which is probably for the best, really.
Probably for the best. Like, let's really get into the details of Steel Wheels. Yeah.
Button your lip.
But anyway, in the early years, they weren't really songwriters. They were kind of a covers band. And then the Beatles started writing songs, and then you can, there's footage of them trying to write songs very poorly, but kind of feeling the pressure of, like, oh, the Beatles are doing this now, so we better pick up our game. So that's kind of a cool thing.
And actually, this song that we're going to play now follows that exact same mold of the Stones following the Beatles, because it was recorded around June 12th of 1967, which was after Sgt. Pepper's had come out, and it was right in the Summer of Love, and the Stones were trying to get a taste of this psychedelic stuff, and with not great success, I would say, overall.
This is one of my least favorite Stones eras, I guess, other than the aforementioned Steel Wheels era.
Yes.
because it's like, a couple of times the Stones just feel like, why are you guys being followers and doing something that's not really in your wheelhouse? Is psychedelic music. There are a couple of good psychedelic songs that they did. She's a Rainbow comes to mind, and a couple things like that. But overall, I find them kind of wanting as a, I'd rather hear the Zombies.
Yeah.
You know, or I'd rather hear the Beatles doing psychedelic music than the Stones. So, not my favorite era, but this single's pretty good.
Yeah, the song is called We Love You. It was a A-side, and the B-side was also a pretty good song, Dandelion. And it features John and Paul. They weren't credited on the recording, but they were there. You can definitely hear them singing background vocals and playing some percussion, maracas and tambourine. And the story is that Allen Ginsberg, the poet who we talked about in the McCartney Collaborations episode, was there too in the studio, and he was shaking beads and kind of directing them with various psychedelic things in the studio. And said that they...
Sounds like a very fun day.
I bet it would have been great to be there. I know. But you can definitely hear them in the background. So let's play a bit of We Love You, and then we'll talk about it in a moment. That was We Love You by the Rolling Stones, featuring John and Paul on background vocals, and an example of an early collaboration with John and Paul.
Not much going on in that song.
No,
going on. It's like, whoa.
Some funky sounds. They're trying really hard to be psychedelic, but but it's pretty interesting. I do kind of like the song, but. This was not, as I mentioned, the last time that a Beatle, particularly John, would collaborate with a member of the Rolling Stones. And I know you're a big fan of the Rolling Stones Rock and Roll Circus.
Yeah, this was a concert they had put together, sort of a bizarre kind of like filmed concert at a studio or something, which they decorated up to look kind of like a circus. And there's circus clowns and little people and all kinds of weird stuff happening. The Stones played. Also, other groups playing are Taj Mahal, an early version of Jethro Tull playing, one of their first appearances, really. Famously, The Who played. They played a song called A Quick One while he's... in parenthetical titles while he's away. I love parenthetical titles.
Yes, it's a good one.
As we continue to establish.
Yes.
And they were just phenomenal, and that's why this footage wasn't seen for a long time, because the Stones were like, they kind of did better than us and sort of showed us up, so we don't want to release this footage. But about somewhere in the middle of it, a group called the Dirty Mac played. The Dirty Mac who was in the Dirty Mac, Dave?
Well, the Dirty Mac, you had John on vocals and guitar. You had Keith Richards on bass, which he sounds pretty great on. Eric Clapton, who also sounds amazing. And then Mitch Mitchell from the Jimi Hendrix Experience on drums. So a real super group, even for that period, for 1968. And it was pretty great group.
Only one thing could make that better, and that's a woman standing on the side of the stage and then placing herself into a giant black bag.
Would that be, let me think about that, would that be Yoko?
Yes. And they actually played two songs, the second song of which was a bunch of Yoko shrieking and yelping, which we do not need to play. But the first song, and this comes, if you see the footage on the YouTube, you're going to see a bizarre interaction between John and this guy, Mike, which is really Mick Jagger, and they're eating a plate of food for some reason.
Drugs, yeah. I mean,
yeah. With I assume it's Chinese food because they're using chopsticks, and they have this weird interaction, and it ends with Mick saying, "You're blues, John. You're blues, John. You're blues, John." So here is "You're Blues, John."
Lonely, wanna die. Yes, I'm lonely, wanna die. If I ain't dead already, girl, you know the reason.
Terrific performance of that tune. Really, I think they live up to their name, the Dirty Mac. Now, a Mac, of course, is a British slang for a raincoat. So there you go, dirty raincoat. But they sound pretty down and dirty and gritty on that song. And if you compare it to the Beatles version, it's how do you compare it to the Beatles version? I mean, it's pretty different in some ways.
Different. It's real. I tell you what stands out for me is the drumming.
Yeah.
Mitchell is such a great, fantastic drummer. If you haven't listened to very much of the Jimi Hendrix Experience on their main records, I'd say definitely check it out. EC is just effortlessly like playing
ripping out solo blues licks. Yeah,
pretty awesome. That's a good collaboration, and of course then. That was sort of around the same time John played his first technically solo gig in Toronto.
Right. He took Eric Clapton with him again for this one-off gig at the Rock and Roll Revival in 1969. And it was a really thrown-together concert here. They were rehearsing on the plane and didn't even really know what they were playing until they got there. But it was John, it was the first time he called himself the Plastic Ono Band. And the Plastic Ono Band had Klaus Voormann on bass, Alan White, who later became the drummer of Yes, and then Eric Clapton again. And, of course, Yoko was there, too.
Should say Yoko. You're like, one of the, if we're talking John collaborations, Yoko's the biggest collaboration.
Yeah, definitely.
Him and her are, you know, played a lot on solo stuff together, and John and Yoko Ono and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That's kind of obvious, and we'll talk more about that when we get to a Yoko episode, which everyone eagerly awaits.
Yeah, but it was pretty great, the John stuff. Of course, it sounds ragged, but it still has a rawness to it. And so they run through songs. John says, when he gets up there, he says, we're just going to play numbers that we know because we've never played together before. And so they run through Blue Suede Shoes and Money, Dizzy
Miss Lizzy. Yeah, that's pretty cool to hear that.
Sounds good, yeah. And then a couple recent tunes from that time, Cold Turkey, which Eric Clapton also plays on, and then Give Peace a Chance. And so
And you're blues again.
And you're blues again. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then the second part of the concert.
The second part of the concert.
Features more Yoko. And I'll just leave it at saying this, that during the concert, if you watch the first one, which is another parenthetical song, it's one of Yoko's, Don't Worry, Kayoko, and then in parentheses, Mummy's Only Looking for a Hand in the Snow. If you watch, it's a pretty cool riff, actually. The song has a cool riff. But if you watch Eric Clapton, the more that Yoko shrieks and howls and stuff, his face looks like, what am I doing here? He's looking over at her like, what is going on here? Wow, when is this gig over? I mean, I love John, but anyway, so that was the live piece in Toronto, and you can check that out on YouTube or get the DVD for that, and definitely worth seeing for watching John. He's in all white, and he's got his big fat beard, and Yoko's in a white bag, I believe. So not a black bag this time, but a white one.
So the next collaboration we'll talk about is actually with somebody I like probably a little more than you like, Frank Zappa. I think Frank Zappa is a great, great guitarist. One of the most underrated guitarists, really. He's phenomenal.
Yeah.
He's also a good composer, and there many of his releases over the years were just basically compositions or instrumental. You know, he had the compositions album, and then he'd release the instrumental guitar songs album. And then he'd release his more pop song type stuff, which was usually maybe a little bit crude and definitely humor-based songs. They're not very, like deep, like, love songs or anything like that. Songs like My Guitar Wants to Kill Your Mama and stuff like that. So, and I like all of it. And I think I particularly like the albums Apostrophe and Overnight Sensation, and all of you should check those out.
That said, and I would point out, I also like some of his earlier albums too. His first album is pretty great, called Freak Out, and then he and the Beatles always had a thing as well. Like, he made fun of the hippies and made fun of psychedelic music on We're Only In It for the Money, and which was, you should see that cover, because it's a spoof of Sgt. Pepper, and some really satirical, biting songs about hippies. So it's kind of interesting, eventually, that John or the Beatles and Frank Zappa would cross paths, but it's unfortunate that they did this way, because We're now in the early 70s. John's in New York and going back between London and New York. And in 1971, Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention were playing at the Fillmore East. And John and Yoko were invited on stage and were there. And it could have been a pretty cool collaboration, but unfortunately the material was thin, to say the least. So they really only play one real song, and that was a song that John used to sing back in the 50s. Well, Baby, You Know I Love You, Baby, Please Don't Go. And unfortunately, you'll hear something that mars the performance. So why don't we listen to a little bit of that now?
This is a song that I used to sing when I was in the cabin in Liverpool. I haven't done it since, so...
Whoa, wow. That was good up to there. I was kind of like, oh, yeah, what's happening? And then Was there a cat being strangled on the side of the stage or something?
It's too bad because it's a really good performance and John sounds great, but Yoko, unfortunately, was so they left the mic on. So, but also the rest of that concert, it was just a bunch of jams that kind of went nowhere, and there were some legal battles and just didn't end very well. But it's an interesting possibility. What could have been if John and Zappa had really had a chance to work together. So it's that you can find those recordings on John's 1972 album, Sometime in New York City.
There was also, in 1971, John got interested in this guy, a New York-based musician named David Peel.
Yes. he's right in the height of his political... John is a political activist, and so he met this guy, David Peel, who was a sort of a ragtag musician and New York political activist guy, and so John produced an album of his called The Pope Smokes Dope, which for some strange reason just didn't become too popular and wasn't pushed by the record companies very much. I don't know why, but...
That sounds pretty commercial to me.
Yeah, very, very much so, yeah. But you can check out some of the recordings of David Peel. I don't think he's much of a singer. Interesting political figure at the time. And
you can see there's a YouTube clip of John and Yoko, Elephant's Memory, and David Peel performing New York City Hippie.
Yes, yes.
On the David Frost show. So
yes, they look pretty
that's
crazy.
That's probably the most interesting. But we... We'll spare you
yes.
from that play any of that.
Yep.
Also, if you remember from a recent episode, maybe a very, very recent episode, the last episode,
yes.
John collaborated with Ringo, played on Ringo's album, Ringo,
mm-hmm.
40 years old this year, and wrote a song for him called I Am the Greatest. And the next time he collaborated was right at the very beginning of the what would be known as the Lost Weekend period, which is sort of like 1973 to 75, where this is where the bulk of these collaborations happened. First one of which was a song that John helped a guy named... Mick Jagger.
We're
mentioning Mick Jagger for the third time here.
Yeah.
Recorded in late of 1973 at the Record Plant in Los Angeles. Features a lot of people. John Lennon plays on guitar on this. Jack Bruce is on bass. A couple other people. Harry Nilsson is a little bit on the background vocals. And John Lennon produced this song. And it is called Too Many Cooks... And in parenthetical titles, spoil the soup. Let's hear a little bit of it. Minute cooks for the soup.
Yeah, he really snarls that out, doesn't he? Yeah.
Pretty good. That song was never released
yeah.
until once again recently. the weird that we're talking about multiple things like that on this episode. I guess there was some legal issue or whatever.
Well, I think we were talking when we were listening to it. It could be because, again, it's a big super group. Maybe people couldn't get rights. Like, you got Jack Bruce on there, and that's why that bass really stuck out so much. But you have Al Kooper and all these other really good kind of stars on there. So it reminds me, it sounds very much like that, like Lennon's Lost Weekend period. Like, I could hear that song on Walls and Bridges or something. It really has that sound.
Yeah, if you remember, we had a discussion at some point about Whatever Gets You Through the Night, which started this episode. I think those are very similar, and they both sound sort of the same. There's this sort of song that happens in the 70s that sounds to me, and I always imagine it happening on stage on Saturday Night Live or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
And this one definitely it, with all the saxes and that kind of stuff. So
pretty cool tune, though, I have to say.
Yeah, real good groove there with Jack Bruce just, like, going at it on bass there. So
yeah,
pretty cool. Now, on background vocals on that one was one Mr. Harry Nilsson, who we've talked about a little bit before.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very good note, is that released very recently is an album collection of Harry Nilsson. It's called Harry Nilsson, the RCA Albums Collection. And on Amazon, here's what you'll get for $99.29. You get 17 discs worth of music. Unbelievable.
Wow.
You get all of his most famous works, including Pandemonium Shadow Show, Aerial Ballet, The Point, Nilsson Smilsson, an album called Pussycats. Pussycats was produced by one Mr. John Lennon. I'm going to play a track, one of the best tracks from this album, Pussycats, called Don't Forget Me. And then I'll also play, after that, a clip of one of the bonus tracks on it, and you'll see the huge difference. This is a great, great song, one of my favorite songs, Don't Forget Me. And we'll play it right now.
Different versions on that, so much different.
Yeah, I really, really like this album. There's one song that John Lennon wrote, which we played in a previous episode, called Mucho Mungo, which I really, really, really enjoy. And then this song has a lot of weird cover songs,
a lot of oldies.
Including Subterranean Homesick Blues, a Dylan song. He plays a Jimmy Cliff song, Many Rivers to Cross.
Which is my
real good version of that.
That's my favorite song on the album, I would say. Yeah.
And that's probably like the most part of what, when we brought this up before, it was because John and him were huge partiers. John's made him sing real gravelly and stuff, and it kind of like screwed up his voice for years to come.
And I'm sure the constant drinking didn't help either. partying. Yeah.
There's versions that saved the last dance for me, and even Loop de Loop, which is my favorite all time song.
And, yeah.
I was going to play just a little bit of another song on this, which is a real, real fun song called All My Life. So let's hear just a little bit of that too, and then we'll talk about these.
Oh Lord, what is it?
I'm full of it.
Good.
Tonight,
right?
Well, I had my share of bad times. I've been shooting them up, drinking them down, taking them pills, fooling around all my life. But I'm so tired of bad times, I'll have to change my way. And I had my share of good times, I've been moving around, living uptown, laughing my ass off almost every night. But I'm so sore from laughing, I haven't got the will to fight.
Yeah, you can tell that that has a very lively atmosphere to it, and that could be partially because you have, on that track, you've got Ringo on drums, you have Keith Moon on woodblocks. How about that? And everyone knows Keith Moon was a big partier.
Yeah. They didn't go out. They just turned in early and, and went to bed after
session
that.
Session ended at 10 o'clock. Session. That was it. So, yeah, it's got a great vibe to it. It's an interesting album. I think, my own opinion, I like a lot of it too. I think it suffers from the same problem that some of John's mid-70s albums. It's the overproduction. There's two, like, again, kind of the throw everything but the kitchen sink on the songs with the strings and brass and just very heavy, dense production. But still, just for the fact that it's a very good collaboration and they were obviously close friends, John and Harry, and they had mutual respect for one another, and I think that comes through on this album. I think John really did a pretty good job overall.
A side note, it's a bizarre sort of side note to this. There's a group called the Walkmen, which are kind of like a good indie group that gets a lot of, you know, plays a lot of festivals and stuff like that. They re-recorded track by track each of the song on this album and released sort of like the coolest cover version album I've ever heard.
Wow.
Which is a cover, basically them covering Harry Nilsson's album, covering a bunch of stuff. So pretty good record, but
we should also mention at this time, this was the Lost Weekend period, which we'll have an episode on one of these days. But there was another session, and we won't really call it a collaboration because it's more of just a drug fest, but it was really the last time that John and Paul were in the studio together, and it was in March of 1974. Just a very short session, not very inspired music, just a couple of oldies, and they got together. Stevie Wonder was in there, and I think Harry Nilsson was around too. Just a lot of people were there. And they just got together, but the session was released as a bootleg, and it was called A Toot and a Snore, because John is heard on mic saying, asking Stevie Wonder if he wants a toot of cocaine, because cocaine was all going around, and John was apparently high, so not very inspired, but we should mention it for the sake of being complete that John had these other people together and they collaborated in the studio on a pretty rough session.
It's pretty funny to think, like, you get all those musicians together and, you know, they start recording it and like, oh, this could be amazing. And then it's just terrible.
I know it is. It's really disappointing.
It's kind of heartwarming, you know, for like an artist like me who does all this comedy stuff and has a lot more failure than success. It's like, well, even the best of the best, you know.
Yeah, together, exactly.
Like, have like a bad one. So
yeah.
After that, we had another Ringo collaboration.
Mm-hmm. The title track of his follow-up to Ringo was called Goodnight Vienna. And it's a good album. It's kind of it's like Ringo Part 2. Sort of, it's the same style of getting some guest stars. All the Beatles wrote songs for Ringo again. And John's song or contribution was the title song Goodnight Vienna, which I always like. It doesn't really make any sense, but that's okay. And that's just fine. We're going to come back to another Ringo and John collaboration, their last one, in a little bit. But right around this time also, you have two collaborations with people who are still alive and still making music and very famous people.
Yeah, the first one we heard a little bit of the results of at the beginning of the show, which is Elton John. Whatever Gets You Through the Night. Elton also played Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, which was released as a single. And the B-side of that single interests me because I think it's a very underrated song, which is a John-written song called One Day at a Time. Let's hear a little bit of that, and then we'll talk about Elton John.
The John Lennon original, but that gives it a very different sound. You can find the original on Mind Games from 73. Interesting sound. I was just thinking, listening to that, why John and Elton John might have collaborated. And do you think maybe it's because Elton seems kind of McCartney-like in some ways because he's a pianist, he writes very melodic music, he's a good musician, obviously. And John was looking for someone like that who he could collaborate with for a few songs?
Yeah, possibly. I just think it was a really fruitful little thing, and I would have liked to have seen maybe, say, John had not been killed,
that yeah.
maybe they would have done another record together or something.
Yeah, probably.
Like that. It was a very good time for Elton John. He was at his creative peak.
Mm-hmm.
And John, you know, coming in and meeting up with him and writing is probably like he you know, it's like two masters working at their peak.
Right.
You know? So pretty good little collaboration, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So the next collaboration I've been waiting to talk about for a long time.
We have. Yeah.
Which is David Bowie. He recorded an album during his Plastic Soul period, which is not my favorite period of David Bowie, called Young Americans. Everyone's familiar with the title track.
The title song is famous.
Young Americans. Everyone's also familiar with the collaboration with John Lennon, which actually they had recorded most of the album, and then it just happened that one or the other were available, and they got together and they're like, let's just put a couple songs together. Real quick. And one of which was Fame, which was a number one hit and is, you know, it's considered one of David Bowie's biggest hits. But I don't love it.
No.
I've never loved it. And
what is it about the song? I mean, it's...
How do you feel about it?
With respect to your love of David Bowie. I've never really been a big David Bowie fan, so I'm not enamored with the song particularly. It's basically a groove for me. That song, it's nothing but just sort of a funky groove. And yeah, there's not really much of a song. It doesn't really go anywhere to me, so I'm not a big fan of that song in particular.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of it either. I think you describe it pretty well. The groove is pretty cool.
Yeah, it is.
And the guitars sound really, really kind of great. It's a well-recorded song.
That was with he was recording a lot with, was it Carlos Alomar?
Yes, Carlos Alomar, a very good guitarist. So I do like elements of it, but I just think it's overplayed. It's one of these songs that just, like, why they play Fame all the time and not Win, which is another song on that album, I cannot fathom. You know, I like,
well, maybe it's because of John being on the track.
Yeah, yeah. And you can distinctly hear him with it, particularly in the tadaloo tate tatates. You know, we'll hear just a little bit of that as the episode ends. But I wanted to play another one of these cover songs, and this is David Bowie and his version of Across the Universe.
Words are flowing out like endless rain into a paper cup. They slither wildly as they slip away. Across the universe, pools of sorrow, waves of joy are drifting through my open mind, possessing and caressing me.
It goes along with my thoughts about David Bowie, and if you're a big David Bowie fan, please feel free to make fun of me if you want, but it feels like he just...
I will.
Well, I know you will. I'm talking, yeah, our listeners too. I feel like David Bowie just over-sings everything. Like, it sounds very overdone, his vocal on that one, to me. I like the groove, I like the music, the guitars sound great.
Maybe it's an unpopular view, but I've never much cared for Across the Universe. I think it's a... As a song in general, oh. I think it's a...
not one of John's
best. I don't know,
best.
I can't even describe why I don't like it. Something about the... Like, I'm sort of like, why write this one? Mm. Like, what are you trying to... You know, it's sort of like platitudes to be yours.
you know,
platitudes about... mysticism or something, yeah. You know, I just don't, you know, I don't much care for it, but I liked this version actually a little bit, and it maybe it captured what never worked for me about it as a Beatles song. On this one is the drums are like pacing it and making it a little more urgent. I think had the Beatles song been a little bit more like that and a little bit less slow playing, I think I might have liked it a little bit better.
You have to definitely give David Bowie his due. He's been very successful, and he fits into the Beatles story because of these collaborations with John. So,
yeah.
But John obviously saw something in him.
I will admit to this, not the best of this collaboration was sort of a one-off, really, really sort of hastily recorded, and not very good. And the song Fame, I think they just came up with kind of on the spot.
Yeah, it sort of sounds
and
like it.
The fact that it becomes a big number one hit and like a much, much better song, you know, I don't understand that. But so not the best collaboration, really, to be very honest. And then the very last Lennon collaboration.
Yeah, it was the final Ringo collaboration. Ringo kept trying this formula of cranking out albums with guest stars, and he still has done that to this day, really. But this was the last one that John was involved in. And it was in 1976, June 12th, it was recorded. It was a song that John wrote called Cookin' in the Kitchen of Love for Ringo. And it was on his 1976 album, Ringo's Rotogravure. Not one of the finest Ringo albums of all time. You have a few weak tunes on there, to be sure. The formula had run out by that point, I think. But it's interesting for John's contribution, at least. And John's on piano for Cooking in the Kitchen of Love, and we'll take a listen to it now. Well, what do you think of Cooking in the Kitchen of Love?
I don't know if I want to go full dud on this. I'm close to saying dud.
Yeah.
I'm close to saying dud. It's a little bit listless.
Mm-hmm.
I think when we talked about Ringo last week, we talked about how some of the songs that were on that record wouldn't have worked on later records.
Yeah.
This is a good example of, it's just kind of like, there's not a lot going on. I mean, there's a lot going on musically as far as like sound is happening, but it's not like, you know, it's like,
yeah.
It's not a sparse song, but it's just not got a lot of energy.
No.
And lyrically, it's like, come on.
I'm trucking down the highway of love.
Yeah, wow, that's profound.
Yeah. So
let's have a party.
Yeah.
We're going to have a party.
Unfortunately, that was John's final collaboration on record, really. So apart from what he did with Yoko on Double Fantasy and Milk and Honey. So, yeah.
So final thoughts?
Yeah, if we look back through this, just to summarize what we've covered a lot of ground here, even for John's short span of collaborations. You have Rolling Stones, you've got the Eric Clapton, the Dirty Mac, you have Frank Zappa, you've got David Peel and some political things, all the Ringo tunes, Elton John and David Bowie. It's quite a list.
Probably the best of the bunch was the Harry Nilsson
Pussycat
album, I think, you know.
Yeah.
Producing that and it's a good result. That's a good album and the you know, obviously the hits he had with Elton John were pretty good too. And to maybe a little bit of lesser extent, the David Bowie thing, it was a hit and a lot of people like Fame, the song.
Yeah.
So we'll go out by playing a little Fame for you.
If you want to comment on David Bowie or anything else on this show or what you hear,
tread lightly.
Tread lightly.
Anymore.
Yes. And, please go ahead and
like us. If you want to make good comments about us or David Bowie, please do. If you want to make bad ones, think twice.
Please like us on Facebook. We've gotten more likes and some comments and things, so feel free to add some comments there or contact us that way or on iTunes, whatever you want to use. And
I've got a couple of friends that are tweeting me all the time at my Twitter at Christy Bragg,
mm-hmm.
and you can find out about projects I'm doing here in Chicago and things of that nature as well.
Excellent. And we want to let you know that our next episode will be on a review and discussion of the movie Help, which just came out on Blu-ray, and Chris dutifully took notes on while he was watching. So
I've even read the little booklet in here.
It's, pretty
good thing. So it's going to be an exciting episode.
Yeah, so we'll get to talk about that. And as Chris said, we'll go out listening to the 1975 collaboration between David Bowie and John Lennon on the song Fame. And thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.